This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme, from serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Ah, the Bills running away now.
You're listening to the best of the Bills.
Touchdown, the first play from scrimmage.
A weekly mix of WGR 550's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Topic of discussion for you today is, what is your big picture take on where the Bills are following their 2024 season? 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Those are your numbers to join us. And we do have open lines for you. We should mention a little bit of NFL news crossed when we went to break. Offensive coordinator for the Baltimore Ravens, Todd Monken, has signed a contract extension. Joined them on a two-year deal, just got it extended after the Ravens led the league in total offense. Let's get to the phones, though, at 803-0550 and to Ames in West Virginia. What do you got for us, Ames?
You guys can just call me Tom.
Okay.
But as the big picture going into this next season, I feel the Bills are still trending upwards. I still feel we're a very good team. As any other Buffalo fan, I feel very disgusted at what happened in the AFC Championship game, and I don't really want to get into it. It'll just make me upset all over again. So let's just go. I think approaching this next year, I want to know how you guys feel about going into the draft. Percentage-wise, I truly feel that Bean needs to attack this draft 80% defense, 20% offense. I think we should go defensive front, safety, cornerback, and then possibly go for a wide receiver, a separating wide receiver. And that being said, do you guys have any wide receivers that you feel in this draft that we could get possibly in a fourth round pick or a third round pick, maybe even later, that stands out to you and could be a separator and could be a game changer for this team? And after that, I would like to give out a vote to my favorite callers of the year. I'd like to give a vote to Kevin from Hamburg and Ryan from Toronto. Always enjoy when those guys call and you guys talk to them. So I'm just going to sit back and listen and hear what you guys have to say.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Appreciate the phone call. Look, Steve and I got a lot of work to do. The season just ended. I am not prepared to levy an opinion on who the Bills could get in the fourth round at the receiver position that separates.
Right.
I've got homework to do, and I'm getting started on it.
We
needed last
guys,
week to basically decompress.
There's a couple of guys from Texas, like Isaiah Bond and Matthew Golden. You watch those guys, and they kind of flash. But they're from, I don't know.
Golden's going to go in round one.
Probably. Right. So there might be, it's hard to, when you get out of the first round, it's kind of hard to gauge how, because that's when teams start to diverge in their evaluations, right? You know, one team thinks they're a high second, the other team thinks they're a low third or a fourth. So that's when you start to get divergence. So some of these guys will be available, no question about it. But you get down in the list and you're talking about, you know, down into the 11th and 12th wide receivers in the draft. We'll see. Any of these guys, we've got them on our screen right now. You can see them. But here's the thing. I'm with you. But before you get to the draft, wait until free agency's over, because there's going to be a ton of guys who are more known commodities than the guys in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be, and you got to really completely reset your evaluation of where the Bills are in their roster build after free agency, because it hugely affects. Because listen, you're not going to draft a defensive end if you trade for Myles Garrett or right. Max Crosby or one of these other guys, Trey Hendrickson. You're not going to. So that changes your entire board on the on draft day. So let's wait till free agency. See how that shakes out for the week or two. And you know this too, even you know, that first wave of free agency, sometimes the Bills hit a guy right away. And then then later on, it's 2 weeks down the road in free agency when everybody thinks that everything's over. Well, they'll get a guy who really wants to play somewhere, and they'll be like, okay, we'll get you. And they'll get him for a better price. So we got to wait for that before we get into the draft. But you're right. Right now, you're looking at the defensive side of the ball because they got a lot of guys whose contracts are up, and the offense is kind of settled in. It looks good developing. Certainly, Hollins is a concern. Amari Cooper is going to be a free agent. So all of those guys are, okay. But you've got Shakir, you got Kincaid, you got Knox, you got Keon. You've got some guys you can hang your hat on to go into the season with. And maybe this next year you don't have to say everybody eats. Maybe you will have two or three guys that'll be the lead dogs in your offense. But for right now, you kind of got to like the roster offensively. So I'm with you. 80%, 20% offense, defense. I'm there with you. But, man, let's get through free agency because, as always, there's going to be a lot of new faces on this team. And you got to find out which guys have had time in the NFL and which guys haven't before you get to the draft.
I will say it's probably safe to assume that the Bills feel, bless you, they need to get more athletic and maybe even a little bit younger on the defensive side of the ball. They need speed and athleticism on that side of the ball in a big way. But to label percentages, it's a little too early. Little too early to say, we're going 80% defense in the draft. I do think they have to go defensively heavy this offseason overall, free agency, trade, draft, whatever means. But to say 80% draft, it's a little premature for that because, to Steve's point, you got to see what they scoop up in free agency first. And like Brandon Bean says all the time, we try to cross off as many positional needs as possible in free agency so we don't feel like we're reaching for a positional need when we are in the draft, because it's a dangerous trap that you can fall into. Let's go to Diane and Clarence next. What's up, Diane?
Hello, Steve and Chris. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to shout out to good old Judy. She's a hoot. Love when she calls you guys. I listen all the time. But I guess what I'm calling is I kind of want to throw that question back at you guys. And the reason I'm asking that, and it's funny you talk about Groundhog Day, because over the weekend, with nothing on TV, I'm scrolling the TV, and I come across the show 30 to 30 about the Bills' four trips to the Super Bowl. And I got to tell you, I almost shut it off about five times, but couldn't, because I did call before. I was a cheerleader in Atlanta for the last one. And at the end of that show, interviewed you, Steve, Don, Thurman, and the guys, asking what was it, I don't know if I'm phrasing the question correctly, but it was, what in your minds didn't go right or didn't happen to win one of them? And you guys all said the same thing, that you didn't know. So I guess, speaking of Groundhog Day, I'm kind of nervous that we're at this point with this team. Granted, they went further than anybody thought they were going to go this year. And, of course, we get to this game with Kansas City, and I don't want to hash it either. But I think everybody really thought, because how great they did and was unexpected, that this hurt so much more because of the fact that now we wanted more because the team gave us more. And so I guess my question is to you guys, what in your heart, in your gut, is telling you where are we, and are we going to bust through that we don't have to watch in another 20 years this team with Josh Allen going to these AFC divisional games and playoff games and not making it over the hump?
Yeah.
Thank you guys for listening, and I love to listen to you every day.
Well, thanks, thank you for doing that. You know, it's a fair question. I think we have to wait and see how the roster is retooled, you know, before we can make a true assessment. But I think it goes without saying that there are some upgrades that need to happen on the defensive side of the ball, chiefly here going forward. You know, and Brandon being in his personnel department in concert with the coaching staff will decide when and where that has to take place and how, too, based on a number of factors, including where their cap situation sits when they make decisions, whether it's cap casualties, restructures, outright player cuts, whatever the case might be. So there's a lot of work that has to be done before we really even know what this roster is going to look like, where we can make an educated assessment as to what's possible going forward. I would say that the core of the team is largely intact. The coaching staff looks like it's going to remain intact. You've got a brilliant young coordinator in Joe Brady, an up-and-coming coordinator in Bobby Babich on the defensive side of the ball. Those are all positives because there's no change taking place there. So there's that continuity is beneficial to a football team, as we have learned over the years. But beyond that, it's kind of a wait and see. So I know that's kind of a cop-out answer, but I think we all anticipate this team is going to contend for the division again next year and be in the playoff mix again.
Yeah, and I'm a little more optimistic than Brownie is. I think this is a team that is going to have fewer question marks, at least on one side of the ball, than it did a year ago. And I think there's a couple of things that you can count on, as you've seen over the last handful or 4 or 5 years since 2020. One is you got a quarterback that can take you the distance. That's first and foremost. Secondly, and I know some people don't like to hear this, but Sean McDermott has done more with less in this roster and his rosters. He's maximized these rosters. I mean, they play well. They put together a game plan and execute game plans week in, week out, year in, year out, far above the talent level that you would have expected them to be able to before the season starts. They did it all the way back in 2017. And they have done it every year since. They did it this year. Let's not forget. I mean, everybody counted them out this year. Sean McDermott, his staff, the strength of their staff, and there's always critics out there who say, well, he can't do A and B, and he's peaked, and he doesn't do this, and their game management, and the 13-second game, and yada, yada, all that. Yeah, okay. But I'll tell you what, one thing he does do is when Brandon Bean throws in 53 guys in the roster, Sean McDermott, those guys achieve, overachieve. Unexpected contributions from all over the roster. The bottom and mid guys in the draft and free agency, all these guys that were okay in other places, play their best football under Sean McDermott and the Buffalo Bills coaching staff in this culture. So the two things you've got going for you is, Josh, you got the quarterback, and you got a coaching staff that maximizes the talent that they're going to get. Brandon Bean has less of that to make up for this year than he did last year. They're starting from a better spot in this offseason than they did last year. I would anticipate them to take a step forward roster-wise, talent-wise. And as I just said, this is a coaching staff that takes advantage of it. And with the continuity of the coaching staff, your quarterback, and the offensive side of the football that looks to be like ready to shift gears and go another, you know, run it back and go even better. Yeah, I'm with Brownie. This team is going to be right there for the division title again, and there's every chance it could be in line for trying to get the one seed. I know it's a huge thing to say in 3rd of February, but that's where this team's going to be in their goal setting, because they've seen how important it is to do that, and sooner or later, I mean, history is the way it is for a reason. This Chiefs iteration, as phenomenal as it has been, we have never seen anything like it for a reason. It's really hard, really hard to continue to do what they're doing. And sooner or later, they're going to have to step up and take a breath. And when they do, somebody will tell me, you'll take a swing at them and knock them off. Maybe it'll be the Bills. Maybe it'll be somebody else. But I'm very optimistic about where this team is in the big picture.
If they can work under the cap, I would be all about it, because pick number 30 I mean, that is a roll of the dice on a pick number 30 is going to be an impact or not. And you have no way of knowing who's going to be there. The defensive end group could be wiped out by pick 30 because of how good those players are this year and how many needs there are at, I would say, maybe the second most important position in all of football. Yeah, if you can make it work money-wise, I would be all over Myles Garrett. To have the best defensive player in football with Superman at quarterback, that's a pretty great way to do it on both sides.
That is Matt Miller, NFL Draft Scout on Twitter, at NFL Draft Scout Matt Miller, on with One Bills Live. Good morning, Jeremy and Joe. Going to be a wintry mess tomorrow, apparently, on the way to work. So, all right, out there today, it's icy. Everything rained and melted and then refroze. It's really icy out there. But, you know, winter. That's how it goes.
Tomorrow's going to be worse.
Yeah, I think so. So you can give us a call on the Sabres' fourth straight win and all that comes with that, if you'd like. We talked about that quite a bit earlier today, and Dennis Gilbert got in a fight right off the bat. The Sabres had a team meeting. We're going to talk with Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff coming up at 8 o'clock this morning on all that. So if you want to chime in on that, you're more than welcome to. You can also give us a call on Myles Garrett. We've just dabbled there a little bit this morning, have some more. One question I have for you is, and anybody else have an answer to this, what do you want to happen on Sunday in the game? If you're not watching, you can't take it, blah, 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 fine.
Uh-huh.
But if you, when you turn it on, what do you want to happen? Because I have an answer for this. And maybe the rest of you do. You have something you want to happen because it will, whatever, confirm your narrative. Or you'll just watch Mahomes be bad, if that's what you want. I have a thing that I really want to happen in this game.
And it's not just the Eagles blowing them out?
No.
Because that would be the simplest answer, I would think.
That you want? Because
I want that?
You have to use your Bills brain here. If the Eagles blow the Chiefs out, does that make the Bills look worse? Hey,
sure.
You're not as good as you thought you were. I feel like Bills fans and a lot of fans will do this. I want to see a certain result because of what it will say about my team.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just give you mine, and you let me know if I'm insane.
Okay.
I want the Eagles to hold the Chiefs in check offensively, and I don't care who wins the game.
And you don't care who wins the game?
Not really. That part doesn't matter.
I don't want to hear about the Chiefs three-peat for the rest of my life.
We're going to hear about them next year when they're in the Super Bowl anyway.
But the three-peat part of it, like that'll graduate beyond even where they're at now.
I'm sure I'll root for the Eagles as the game goes along. The number one thing I want to happen is for a defense to hold Kansas City in check to a degree. Because I want more attention paid to the fact that the Bills do not do that.
Mm-hmm.
And if Myles Garrett is the answer, because that's the best answer you've got, okay. Yeah. But it's not, to me, we're still, you know, how many days after they lost that game and their tone about, I would take it in 17's hands at the end of the game every single time, glosses over just how bad their defense is against the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. And if another team, like Houston was not terrible defensively against the Chiefs. And if the Eagles win this game 23-20, and Mahomes doesn't light them up, that to me, that's another mark that says, come on, you have to expect to be better. I think there's an expectation, and I've had this as well, Joe, where you think, well, there's nothing you can do against them to stop them. And other teams are finding ways to keep them in check.
Yeah.
Not always beat them, but at least keep them in check. So I'm going in this game, you know, 27-17 Eagles would be amazing.
Do you think the Bills need to learn that, though? Or, like, maybe people just need to learn that? Like, because the Bills, I don't know. Do they talk like they know that this is true, that they're the worst?
Do they talk
like it's the Chiefs? What, everyone in the league is chasing them? You know, like, what are you going to do? Throw your hands up. This happens to everybody. Because the way they're losing to the Chiefs does not happen to everybody.
No, that's right. Chiefs score more against the Bills than everybody else. The Chiefs have more success against the Bills than everybody else.
But I also want to be fair to them. I don't know they've ever been asked the question that way. You know?
Right.
Like, it's more about the general, it's about the feelings of it, it's about, like, the Chiefs in general, more than it is. Like, have they got the question, hey, how come you're the worst? What explains that?
No. At McDermott's end-of-season press conference, it was a lot of, about what they have to do to get over the hump and how he said, right, why did the offense not come through on those final drives? Meanwhile, right, you got the ball back with a chance to get a stop and didn't get stops there either.
That's what I mean. I'd like to hear what their – I'd like – behind closed doors, of course, too, would be more important because that's going to determine their actions more. But – How do they feel they're losing to this team?
Not even just this team. Include the Bengals. We have the numbers. In their five playoff defeats, 40 drives against or whatever, it's 22 touchdowns and 9 field goals.
Yeah.
On non-kneel down drives. 40 drives, mm-hmm, 31 scoring drives. It's horrendous.
Yeah.
Other teams are not this bad in the playoffs. And if the Eagles are – if the Chiefs go out and score 50, I'm like, okay, well, maybe their offense was inevitable this year. But right, it wasn't inevitable last year, and, okay, you had an injury or two. It just feels like I'm still, a week later, Joe, sensitive to people wanting to blame Allen and the offense for not coming through on that final drive when their defense was a disaster for most of the game and has been for 5 playoff losses.
And I'm still sensitive to the idea that they would take – They feel like they did their job as a defense with Allen with the ball down 3 with 3.5 minutes to go. Like, hey, this is, we did it.
Yeah.
We did it. Mission accomplished on our end. Now your turn. And I know he can win that game and he should win that game. I just can't believe that can't be the standard to me. We had a successful day on offense or on defense if our quarterback gets the ball, and he is losing with 3 minutes to go. In an offense which, by the way, is built to run the ball, screens, yak plays, they are not built. It wasn't tested very often this year. They're not really built, though they weren't last year, built for the 3-minute drive where it's pass, 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 down the field, tight coverage, I got to throw it, like, because we're desperate here. Like, they're not really built to play that way. And maybe they will be next year. I don't know. Maybe they'll have T. Higgins on their team, or maybe they'll have some second-round rookie who's going to explode. Like, maybe they'll be better off in a spot like that. I just think their standard on defense needs to be higher against the Chiefs.
Well, maybe they'll have Myles Garrett. I don't think they'll have Cooper Kupp. I don't know.
That's insane.
I've seen them linked to Cooper Kupp on articles more than Myles Garrett.
Which, and he's in the, and they're in the odds. They're high up for Kupp. They're like the second leading favorite in the betting odds.
It really just doesn't make any sense.
And that's just whoever's deciding to set the betting odds put them number 2. And I'll pile that dude on top with Michael Fabiano and all these others that are right. National media writing about, oh, the Bills need a receiver. Do people know there's like different receiver positions? Like, I know some, Matt Harmon knows, right? Like, there are those that know, Ben Solak, there are those that study the league that know the difference. But, like, how many people in media, or how many people that cover football, just don't even know the difference between an outside and an inside wide receiver? Because I feel like we're seeing a few of those.
Yeah, well,
Kupp makes no sense for the Bills.
I think he makes no sense for the Bills. I saw one potential landing spot for Kupp, which I thought did make sense, and that's Cincinnati. Like, they're going to lose Higgins and Chase on the outside, and Cooper Kupp could eat, and that's,
no, that works.
That's Zach Taylor, who comes from the Sean McVay tree.
Yep.
So Cincinnati might make some sense there, and of course they had Tyler Boyd forever.
I like that one.
Mm. And Jermaine Burton, by the way, who's the rookie in Cincinnati, like, he's not even going to be on the team next year. It's gone really bad.
That's why, I think that's why he went in the third round, wasn't it? It's because he's kind of a head case.
Yes, tons of talent and a head case.
Yeah, anyone connecting Kupp and the Bills.
I don't get it. It doesn't make sense.
The reason why is, if you've watched his career and you look at the numbers, where he lines up, where he's productive from, he is productive from the slot. And he's amazing at it. He's been incredible at it. But that is primarily where he is at his best. So if you are to get him on the Buffalo Bills,
he's running screens for you. If I see Kupp in this offense, he's running screens.
Right. Like, one of two things is really happening, though. One, he's playing mostly out of position, playing on the outside, winning against press coverage on the boundary, or he is playing in the slot, and you're now taking Khalil Shakir off the field.
Yeah.
And I might want to argue at this point Khalil Shakir is a better football player than Cooper Kupp. It at least would be close, I think.
Maybe.
Kupp isn't the same player he once was.
No, and one thing that happened to Kupp, of course, is that he got – The number one target in that offense is Puka Nacua. That's who the Bills really need, is Puka Nacua.
Yeah, his body's broken down a lot, too. He's had a ton of injuries.
Kupp.
So that's why it doesn't make any sense. Like, this is why, like, a little bit of you know, the way that Ladd McConkey last year was described in the draft, like, kind of, like, I don't ever focus on him and Keon Coleman. Like, oh, the Bills drafted Keon Coleman. Wish I had Ladd McConkey, who had 1,000 yards and, like, 8 touchdowns and was definitely had a better rookie season than Keon Coleman, right? Like, not even close. But why haven't you heard that mentioned one time about, oh, I wish the Bills had Ladd McConkey? Because Ladd McConkey plays the exact same role that Khalil Shakir does.
He plays it really well.
You already
well.
Have it.
McConkey does get used down the field a bit more. But, yeah.
A right. little bit more, right. Sure. So that to me, like, just more perspective on that would be nice of not every receiver is the right type of receiver for what your team needs. And this would be one of those where, like, okay, the Bills need a wide receiver. Oh, Cooper Kupp's a wide receiver. No, it's not that simple.
Just redundant. It strikes me as redundant. I mean, if he's on the team for cheap, I mean, I'm not saying he's, like, going to make you worse, but redundancy. They need something else. They need a different kind of guy.
I mean, if another type of receiver of his caliber came available that was, like, you know, is DK Metcalf going to jar loose? Like, Adam Schefter tweeted at the deadline that he's not getting moved today, and everyone's like, he was, okay. What? Why'd you do that?
Well,
was he available? Did we not know about it? Like, there's some Metcalf, you know. There's been Metcalf smoke in the past.
Metcalf is one I would think about a lot. The thing about Metcalf, though, is do I want Metcalf and Keon Coleman? Maybe. Maybe the style of Joe Brady's offense calls for that. He's obviously very fast. He is not limited to one route. Like, Metcalf, there's one of the knocks on him coming into the league was, well, is he just a guy that runs past people? And the answer to that is not really. He does a bunch. He would give them over-the-top pop. He would give them contested catch. He gives them
He would give them separation when he's going over the top, too.
Yes, yes.
You know, like, running behind guys rather than, like, it has to be a jump ball.
Yep. So, it's
he needs to be paid, though.
Right.
28 years old. He's got 1 year left, so you're going to have to pay him big time.
Is he... He's not an elite do-everything receiver. Is he elite at what he does in that job? Because the Garrett conversation ties into all these people that like the idea of Cooper Kupp are remembering him at one point being one of, like, the top three most productive receivers in football. And this offseason is not going to be about get 10 kids in the draft and sign some cagey free agents.
Yep.
What the Bills have to be doing is making a run for it. You know, I like to occasionally make fantasy football comparisons, as ridiculous as they sound. But if you're a team that made the playoffs last year and the reason you lost is because the guy on the other side had Jamar Chase, like, you got to go trade some of your good players and get a guy that can drop 50 in the championship. That's kind of what the Bills need is, hey, we've got, you know, a bunch of pretty nice players, but would you rather
in fantasy, you have a lot of guys that score 12,
right,
and you could use a guy that could potentially score 40.
Right, because if he scores 40 and then, you know, you're filling two roster spots. Anyway, the Bills have a lot of good players, but the offseason is going to be about the blue chipper. The coach said it. The GM has referenced these guys, whether it's Chris Jones or Jamar Chase. Like, they got to find a blue chipper.
And that's where Garrett is almost feels like he has to be the number one idea.
Or
he has to be somebody they're willing to pay the price on because even, like, I just mentioned Metcalf. Metcalf is not reportedly available right now, but maybe he does. He's in a contract year. There's been stuff in the past. He's very good. He's very good. If he became available today, you know, like, that would be... I like the idea that he's a wide receiver. He is not as good as what he does as Myles Garrett is. You know, he is not the top five wide receiver in the league. He's very good. But is he even blue chipper? Like, he's great at what he does, but at his position, like, he's not someone that's out here rattling off first-team All-Pros, you know? So, and again, that's part of the point, though, to me, is you could have some really good players become available this offseason. What are the odds any of them are as good as what Myles Garrett is? Like, I think almost impossible. Who would it have to be? I mean, a receiver would have to be, it'd have to be a Justin Jefferson. Or Malik Nabers, or like that's
honestly,
not, it's not
it would
happening.
It would have been last year. It would have been Ayuk. Would have been the caliber. I mean, he's the number one separator in football. Ayuk when he's healthy. Of course, now he's coming off.
Even that one though, I would be like, I don't think he's the Myles Garrett of wide receivers.
Yeah.
Is there a safety? Like, who would that be?
Javon Holland is the best safety out there.
Okay.
Free agent.
Then that, and he's good. He's very good. corner, you know, like Sauce Gardner. Like those are the comparisons at other positions to what Myles Garrett is at his. So that's why, like, if you want a blue chipper, this is the dude. I would be floored if another player shook loose and became available this offseason that is as good as his position as Garrett is at his. I just don't think it's possible.
No, you want someone as good at their position as Garrett, you want Josh Allen.
Right, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, right. 803-0550 on Garrett, on all of it. I don't know if he'll.
What is the receiver?
If he'll get moved,
be?
The receiver with a big receiver market.
What's their move going to end up being? Receiver? They're going to add one.
Let's explore this because the last couple years have been defined by receivers that were about to get paid getting moved. Right? Look at all the receivers that got moved. It's Devontae Adams. It's Tyreek Hill.
Yep.
And on and on. We've got big name receivers where a team didn't want to pay and they moved on. And every time a receiver gets a contract, it's wow. Is the receiver market finally going to blow up? Is there a guy that is in line for a big extension and his team doesn't want to give it to him? This is where you say Metcalf might fit that bill. I can't imagine the Bills will spend... I shouldn't say I can't imagine. Are they going to spend big at receiver? Aren't they going to pour almost everything they've got into their defense?
I think
almost so. Almost everything. And there's one specific role on the outside. It is not easy to get a true number one, like a Diggs level, does mostly everything receiver. I think they're going to want a speed specialist. Do they want Marvin Mims? Is that really what they want? Somebody that can win with speed over the top?
I think that's what they need. I think that's the thing they don't have, right? And Mims is actually maybe good for this because what's most likely, if I agree that I think most of their assets go to the defense, the money, the high-end picks. So what is that receiver move? Is that it could, by the way, just be they bring Cooper back, like on a one-year deal. Isn't it probably most likely that it's like a third-round guy?
Yes.
Is the guy. Like, they're going to spend like a third-round pick on a receiver, and we're going to be like intrigued. Like, maybe that could be something. Their third-round, Terry McLaurin was a third-round pick. It can happen where the guy is great. But it's going to be Mims. It'll be Marvin Mims. You know, like, oh, fun player. Let's see what he's got. More than it's going to be anybody that's like really established. Isn't that probably what's going to end up happening?
Yes, I think so.
The guys that are going into, like, you tell all of these are too big of names, I think, right? Like, the names of receivers, not that they're available in free agency, the guys that are going into contract years. So the ones you might think, hey, if their team doesn't want to pay them, then maybe they're available for trade. Metcalf, who we just mentioned. Terry McLaurin, although they're already talking like they want to do that now. They're not letting him go. Cortland Sutton is going into a contract year. Tyler Lockett is going into a contract year. Garrett Wilson, although he'll be an RFA. George Pickens, he's going into a contract year. I don't know if they're going to want to pay him, but do you want that?
I don't want George Pickens.
Romeo Doubs is going into a contract year. Mike Evans, Debo Samuel, Christian Kirk.
Friends with Josh.
That's your guy.
I actually texted you once. We should put
Christian
Kirk on the bet board. Christian Kirk. But isn't he?
Contract year. They just paid Gabe Davis.
Right.
And they have Brian Thomas Jr. Actually, wait a minute. That's going to happen, isn't it?
Christian Kirk?
They drafted Brian Thomas Jr. He was incredible. And they just paid Gabe Davis. They're not paying Christian Kirk, are they?
I think he's on the move. Coming off an injury.
This is why I didn't want to bet you on this. And he's really good friends with Josh Allen.
Yeah. I mean, they play golf together.
Golf trips. I've seen wedding pictures of them together.
Yes,
like
Christian
people's
Kirk.
Weddings.
Christian Kirk, put the odds up on the board. Christian
right.
Kirk does
that's,
not.
That's their receiver move
no.
of the offseason?
No. Because.
That'd be too big? What? He could play a role. Is he outside?
He doesn't beat man coverage. No. He's more. Yeah, he just doesn't beat man or beat press. And they need somebody that does that.
Okay. But he's friends with Josh.
He's friends with Josh.
That'll get you a long way.
That'll get you, you know, a backup quarterback job. That'll get you, you know.
Jacoby Myers, by the way, is another one on here. Chris Olave, Jameson Williams. Those are RFA guys. These are the other names.
Olave and the injuries. Like, that's a gamble. He's great.
And then Chase.
Like, Chris Olave.
But I mean, Jamar Chase is
Chris Olave of the Saints is the probably best receiver that does not produce results because of his quarterback and his injuries. But Olave's a separator. That's a guy that if he ever got out of there and got with a pair to the premium quarterback, he would the Diggs thing would happen where, hey, this guy looks like he's pretty good. Can he pop off? He might have to get out of New Orleans. The Saints don't yet have a coach.
Well, it's going to be Kellen Moore.
It's going to be Kellen Moore.
Right.
Yeah.
Unless Kellen Moore like backstabs them at the end here and like, you know, yeah, I don't want to stay here.
Yeah.
I want to stay here in Philadelphia.
Toby in Buffalo before the break. Hey, Toby.
Yeah, real quick. Everything you guys explained to me was Xavier worthy. Like, he's fast, whatever. But the thing is, we passed on him. So I don't really understand. Like, that was a perfect fit for our offense to bring it to the next level, and we didn't do it. So I'm kind of confused because the only guy coming out in the draft now is the kid from Texas. He's fast, but he's going to be a second or third rounder.
Yeah. I wouldn't say worthy is exactly the perfect thing. There's also something to be said about worthy, which is, one, when he got drafted, he was the speed guy. And over the course of the season, the Chiefs, you know, made him look like a little bit more than that. Xavier Worthy, Super Bowl MVP, funny or bad? Would it be funny?
It would be funny in a bad way, right? In an evil sort of sense, if he were to be the Super Bowl MVP. It would be like, you know, someone would tweet out, I'm not even saying I would do this, I probably wouldn't. Someone would tweet out him winning Super Bowl MVP next to like Ryan O'Reilly winning the Conn Smythe.
Uh-huh. Probably.
Like that would probably happen.
Worthy.
Where's he on the odds?
They're
probably not that bad.
I was going to say, kind of kidding, it's going to be Mahomes probably, maybe Barkley, maybe Hurts. There is a pathway for a receiver to do it like Worthy because he gets handoffs. You know, imagine he goes 6 for 85 in a touchdown and also runs for 37 yards in a touchdown because he gets those sweeps, whatever.
Yeah.
They're just saying, it's tough for a receiver to get an MVP without the quarterback getting it instead. But a receiver that gets handoffs has an avenue.
Handoffs, and if he gets like a short pass that takes it to the house, that'll be notable.
I would just bet Mahomes.
He's the third leading Chief.
Behind
Mahomes and Kelsey. Ahead of Chris Jones.
I mean, a defensive player is just not winning MVP.
It goes Mahomes is the favorite, then Barkley, then Hurts, then Kelsey, then Worthy, then A.J. Brown. How about that? He's the favorite amongst all the receivers.
Yeah.
A.J. Brown, Devonta Smith right after that.
803-0550 to join us. Just thought of that could be a good instant trivia.
Maybe like a George Karlaftis plus 10,000 Super Bowl MVP. We can't bet on these things, though.
No, in New York State, you can't bet on MVPs?
No. They don't consider it a sports event.
Speaking of which, by the way, does the MVP, the NFL MVP come out tomorrow?
Tomorrow. Tomorrow's the NFL honors.
Brace yourself.
I've braced myself for a month now. Ever since Lamar won first team All-Pro, I've resigned myself to thinking Allen's not winning.
Hey,
tomorrow at 9 o'clock, by the way.
Chris Jones says Josh Allen's his MVP.
Yeah, how about that?
Not Mahomes.
Like, wouldn't you think any Chief just would snicker at the idea that it's not Mahomes? Like, I don't know.
He said it should be Josh.
There's kind of a love affair between Chris Jones and the Bills, quietly. Bean's talking about how much he loves him and how good he is. Him and Dawkins are like crying and hugging on the field
at the end of the AFC Championship.
He always is defending the Bills. Yeah, wings here. Like fighting people from Miami about like what's going on there?
He's 30 years old, Chris Jones. By the way, speaking of
what's with the bro fest,
just
though?
Like, real quick.
Does he want to play here? What do we want?
Just real fast on this. Chris Jones, dominating games. Amazing. Incredible. I was about to ask you if you want to put it on the bet board. He plays for the Bills. I'm like, oh, he's 30. Wow, he's still doing it. Meanwhile, Myles Garrett's 29. People are like, oh, that guy's busted. It's too old.
You know, yeah, that's true. Yeah, I want to get to a thought, not now, but at some point. Some of the Chiefs are really bad at being villains.
I don't agree with that at all.
Some of them. Jones is on the list.
Okay, maybe.
You're on my list. You need to do a better job of being a villain.
Maybe him. He's the only
him
one.
And the coach.
No, the coach is a villain.
Andy Reid?
Yes.
Oh, I don't agree with that at all.
Yes, he is.
No, he's not.
Last 2 weeks ago, he said, we'll probably be underdogs.
Yeah, but he's got a mustache.
And he's got a Hawaiian shirt?
Yeah.
Whatever. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
Bob is next. Hello, Bob.
Hi, guys. I just wanted to chime in on the Bills offseason. To me, the whole wide receiver thing needs to be addressed, but it goes back to that press conference with Cooper that just really rubbed me the wrong way. I know that we moved on from Diggs because Diggs was a bit of a diva and had that, you know, that aura that he needed a certain number of touches a game. But I've got a real problem with a guy who says, I don't really care if I'm getting the ball as long as we're winning. like you need a little bit more of an alpha in that position from a receiver. And I don't know that that's on this team. There's not really a vertical threat. That's what I'd look to upgrade. But then also, I think defensively, that's where we've come up short in the playoffs, and it's been depth at corner. And I don't want to make fun of the University of Buffalo here, but it's not exactly a Sterling, you know, it's not DBU, and Sean McDermott's turning around and making Cam Lewis, Jamarcus Ingram, and a variety of other guys who knows what they would be doing otherwise outside of being in Buffalo, and turning them into serviceable players, and we can't do anything with Kyir Elam. To me, you have to give the benefit of the doubt to the coaching staff to say they know how to develop defensive back talent. They changed the defensive backs coach last year. Cut bait with Elam and just move on and find somebody that fits the system, but don't put a priority on it in the draft. Go get Myles Garrett. Go get an impact player on the defensive line. But between D-line and wide receiver, that's where this team needs to upgrade. And, you know, I'm raw still after going to the Kansas City game, frustrated mm-hmm. with losing to them again. But there's nothing really worth blowing up about this team other than just fixing those two things. I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks, Bob. Interesting. That is full circle, or is it half? From a guy being a problem because he's greedy to we need a guy, it's a problem,
right.
We don't have a guy who's greedy. I mean, that's a step past where I've heard this already. I mean, a lot of people are here for – I'm not saying it's wrong. Mm-hmm. I think it might be a good point. A lot of people have gotten to somebody better at the position, not so often to – I didn't like it when he said, I don't care if I get the ball. We're very particular here right. as a society. Right. We want you to care, but not too much. Not too little, right. not too much. And right. it's still based on public comments anyway.
Right.
You know, fine line there. Interesting on corner. You know, I've been thinking this.
Elam's done. You don't have to worry about Elam. Like, I can't imagine a scenario where he's back after how that went. The caller makes the right point. Like, they have coached up a lot of guys and made them into players that can be counted on to some extent. I mean, guys that made play, big play, but Ingram had a pick six this year for this team. And Elam, you just can't seem to get him to a place where he can even be serviceable for you. It's just time. Like, you can't keep that guy on your depth chart, even in a break glass in case of emergency scenario, which is what happened, you know, in the championship game, and it just did not work. So you got to just say that's it. Like, the opportunity to trade him even for something commensurate, some other struggling guy at a different position or even the same position, I think is gone. A late round pick, I think, is gone. Like, the guy is just, he'll catch on somewhere, but you're not getting anything for him, and I think you just got to let him go.
Yeah, I might be surprised if he's on the roster as well. I was thinking this, I kind of want to just say a thing, and then maybe if it's a bad take, just sort of like disown it.
Okay.
I'm not sure it's a good point. With Kincaid and with Shakir to an extent, the offense has always felt kind of capped to me. They had an outstanding season and it worked. It worked. But I've got these two guys, you know, Knox plays. I don't want to ignore the season because this is a lot of how I felt last year. But I'm not going to use Shakir as an X. I've got Kincaid, and I'm sort of like hamstrung a little bit. It might be an okay point, this. Taron Johnson has me thinking this way, too, where, like, he does not come off the field, hardly ever. You know, maybe short yardage, certain specific situations, but Taron Johnson, he 94% against Kansas City. And he's great.
A little less than that against Baltimore, but sure. Yeah, generally speaking, they want him on the field, yes.
And he got hurt against Baltimore, or was it against Denver? He got hurt against Denver for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, maybe both teams. I don't know. Anyway, he's on the field. He's a staple
mm-hmm.
of that defense. And, you know, we had a year, teams running the ball more. I wonder what he does in sort of a backwards way to limit what they think they need to do in the secondary. Like, is it less of a priority because of him? Do they want to maybe be bigger but feel like they can't be because of him? You know, I'm sure it's not like that. I don't really think it's a good point. But I do wonder sometimes if these sort of, if you will, I don't mean this in a bad way, but kind of oddball personnel situations makes it less than perfect for them to, you know, be
something. Yeah, yeah, no, something. I think it's, you know, no, I think you want to know if there's, if they maybe even sit around like at this time of the year when it's, you know, everything's. Yeah, let's talk about it all, right? That's what we're here for. We got a lot of time, so let's talk about everything. And is any idea, like backward engineering your way to making the defense better, is that is that in your way? Is that block the path? Like do you find yourself saying, well, you know, if we could do this or that, yeah, but Taron Johnson. Well, okay, well maybe we try that. Yeah, but we want to have to, and you just keep ending up on Taron Johnson. And this is not meant, I don't think you were meaning it to sound this way at all, and suddenly the way I'm making it sound sounds like they have reason to be down on Taron Johnson. But I wonder if it is an impediment to an extent for them having as much variety as they might like there, because I think they'd be right, at least as of now, to say, like, there's at least a comfort level with him on the field all the time, if not flat out, that's my best 11. Like, if he's out there, that's better than some other dude in that spot, a linebacker or some other DB playing whatever. Yeah, I wonder, like, how much. I think his performance, I think, still warrants him having the status he has, but I don't know, I wonder if how open they are to even talking about it.
Because I've been a football fan for a long, long time. I mean, I remember back when the Cowboys was good. I remember back when the Chiefs was bad. And I remember, what was it? Bill Belichick's girlfriend wasn't even born yet.
The NFL Awards.
Second best joke of the night, by the way.
First was?
I think it was, who would have been with Snoop when he says, was it Jelly Roll when he said, I want to play in the NFL because I know you guys definitely don't drug test. I watched the Aaron Rodgers documentary.
Mm.
That was good.
That's good.
Yeah.
I did not hear a Trevor Lawrence joke, but I'm told there was a good Trevor.
Nikki Glaser said, yeah, like part of the problem is I often get mixed up for Trevor Lawrence. Mm, okay. We're a lot alike. People say we look alike and we've done bad things in Jacksonville or something. Okay. Like
when she said that, the camera panned to Brian Thomas Jr.
Yes, it did.
And he shook his head.
That's funny. All right. Jeremy and Nate. Nate's in for Joe. Happy Friday. 803-0550. Sal joins us at 7. We'll talk MVP and, you know, we'll talk lots of things. And at 9 o'clock, Q Myers of the Locked On Raiders podcast, among other things in Raider Nation, talks Raiders everywhere. He's in New Orleans because we want to talk about Max Crosby.
Mm.
Max Crosby, funny. You know, maybe you saw Myles Garrett out there making the rounds, explaining why he wants to be traded. Max Crosby has not said, I want to be traded. He has said, I want to, well, in the interview I saw, join. I'd like to join. I mean,
Yeah.
Well, don't want to start a controversy.
They said, I'd like to be a part of. Oh, okay. That's a nice save. I'd like to be a part of a winner. And he talked about how many coaches he's had in Vegas.
Yeah.
And he talked about how every day he wakes up and a different fan base is tweeting him.
Sure.
Come play here. That's the Bills. That's the Packers. So we'll see about Max Crosby, who would probably be cheaper than Myles Garrett, but still would be a big price. I mean, he's a heck of a player.
Heck of a player. A little younger, too, by the way.
He is 2 years younger, about.
Yeah.
He also hates Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, so much so that he said he would not want to win a Super Bowl with them.
Would do nothing for him.
Because it would be meaningless.
Yep, it would do nothing for him.
I mean.
That's a guy.
Max.
I mean, that's
Max. Let me tell you. 803-0550. We'll get some more calls in. Josh Allen wins MVP. He gets the hardware, and now he gets married.
I guess. He's got a hole in one coming, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of wild that this year he was named the league's biggest trash talker and
most overrated,
and won the sportsmanship award and most overrated, and won the MVP. I'll do the thing where I raise my hand and say it's still totally fine to call Allen overrated if you're someone that thinks he's overrated, because it's okay to call every person overrated because it's fine.
Yeah,
it's just sports opinions.
I do want to go.
People are about to get flambéed, roasted for where they voted in these awards, and it's totally fine if you did not vote for Josh or you did vote for Joe Burrow, because the whole point is to have a diverse set of voters and what they think. That's the idea.
Also, I want to go on record. You know, people said Josh Allen couldn't be an NFL quarterback. He clearly became one. Said he couldn't be accurate. He became very accurate. Said, you know, he couldn't beat Lamar. Said he couldn't be an MVP. You know, he definitely can't win a Super Bowl.
That's what we need.
Let that be the, you know, the rally cry.
I had someone write to me this morning to that point, basically saying what we need is for the league to vote him least likely to win a Super Bowl. That'll get the job done.
That's right.
Sean in Connecticut. Hey, Sean, good morning. Happy Friday, Sean.
Hey, happy Friday, guys. Good morning. I, you know, the last segment there with Mike in Connecticut, he nailed it. I got to tell you something. I have not even been able to listen to you guys since that loss. I just couldn't do it. And I tried a couple of times. I'm like, I can't do it. It's like set my mood for the day. And so with that being said, going to be 49 on Monday, living in Connecticut. The narrative has been out there with Buffalo as losers, and I'm not even going back just what was said recently by media. I don't care about that. I've lived with that my whole life. And to see Josh Allen win it since Thurman Thomas did in 91, it just like it was like a weight off my shoulders, because it's like, you know, he deserves it. The team was awesome for what how they played. I just want to get over that hump. And I know everybody wants to see that, right? And as far as us Bills fans go and Mafia, I feel like a relief. I feel like I can listen again, you know, and it's deserving. So thanks for hearing me out, guys.
Yeah.
And go Bills.
Thanks, Sean. And welcome back. I get it. You got to take a break. Other people write in, this is my first day back because I needed to take a break. It's almost 2 weeks, you know. It's a long time. But thanks for coming back.
I feel the same way as he does. It's been hard. Like I haven't started, like usually, like you, especially when the Bills end their season as of late, like I do like 10 hours of draft coverage on this station.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like immediately season ends, I'm into gotta start prep. I've held off.
Yeah.
I'm not ready for football. I'm going to wait till after the Super Bowl.
Well, do you drive around, anybody out there? It's how many days since they lost? It's 13 days, 12 days, whatever.
Yeah, like 11 days, 12
sure.
days, yeah.
It's a while since they lost. Do you ever find yourself, you're driving around, it's 2:30 on a Wednesday, and you're just like, man, they lost to the Chiefs. And it kind of comes back again. You know what happened. You'd stop thinking about it, and then the 4th-and-5 play pops into your head.
Yeah.
A number of the Chiefs players were asked about that play. I saw Ryan O'Halloran of the Buffalo News had a piece on that. I think it was Ryan. That them being asked, what did you do on that play? What was the design? How did you get it? How had you schemed it up? And it sent me spiraling back. Especially because they admitted they busted coverage on two players.
Yeah.
They busted coverage on Kincaid, and they busted coverage on Shakir. And, of course, the blitzers got through. And Allen was in tough shape, but still, incredibly, did enough.
It's funny. I was on a podcast like right after, and the question was asked to me like, you know, like what do you think of that play? And you know, there was a lot of conversation the days after the days after that game about how, you know, what Josh could have done differently in the, you know, pre-snap aspect of it, and how he should have done more and whatever. Like the thing that I kind of keep thinking about in that play is the margin for how a narrative starts or how a conversation about a game starts being on such a fine line.
Yeah.
Because if Dalton Kincaid makes that catch and the Bills go on to win that game, the conversation about Steve Spagnuolo blowing it for them would have been a real conversation. Not he's the GOAT, but he's a really great defensive coordinator who just cost the Chiefs a chance to three-peat.
Yep. Yeah, it's a fine line between genius and maniac in that
yes.
moment. And it's not lost on me also, as Tyler Dunn wrote up a big thing about Steve Spagnuolo. It's not lost on me. Don't you feel like he knows he can afford to be more aggressive and more reckless / exotic? Because he knows, well, if they score here, I mean,
right.
Pat's getting the ball back.
Mm-hmm.
If he gets the ball back with a minute, I feel like we're going to win that game, because they always do win that game.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we had a guy call, say, first time I've listened in 2 weeks, and we're like, let's talk about that game again. Sorry,
thanks,
Sean,
man.
I'm sorry. We should not have done that. That was a mistake. That's on me. That's hand up. That's on me. Alan in Toronto. Hey, Alan, good morning.
Good morning. Josh Allen, not my choice. Not my choice at all. I realize it's sport and can't see eye to eye on everything. And I'm a Buffalo Bills fan, too, since 1970, 54 years. I've gone to most of the games since 1970. Josh did not crack the 4,000-yard barrier, 3,731 passing yards. Didn't crack the 40-yard TD pass. He had 28. True, he ran for 531 yards, and he only threw 6 interceptions. But Lamar Jackson, look at his numbers. 915 yards rushing, 4,172 yards passing, 41 touchdowns, and he only threw for 4 interceptions compared to Josh's 6. Not too bad. Josh had a 101.4 passer rating. Lamar had a 119.6 passer rating. So he's definitely not my choice. I would have chosen Sean Barkley for 205 yards. He was the ninth player to crack the 2,000 yard passing yards, and he would have smashed it if they would have let him play the last game. So, you know, like I said, we can't see eye to eye on everything. I'm glad he won it because I'm a Buffalo Bills fan, but he's definitely not my choice at all.
All right, thanks, Alan. I don't have any problem with anything you said there.
Same.
That's why. I mean, the voting was close. There are a lot of people that would agree with you and say, I voted for Lamar. Lamar finished second and first place votes. He definitely had a better statistical season. Allen also sat for effectively 3 games.
Yeah.
Because they were winning, you know, blowouts. But, and you know, on Barkley, the thing about Barkley that's super interesting to me is if the Eagles win the Super Bowl, it'll be a lot about how Barkley's one of the best free agent signings of all time, and how is this proof that a running back is super important. Meanwhile, the Chiefs are there again with what at running back? And the Eagles,
Kareem Hunt.
Right, and the Eagles got there 2 years ago with what at running back?
Yeah.
What Barkley is, this is where we're going to get to the Myles Garrett conversation, because I'm excited about this, to have this with you, Nate, and then you out there as well. What Barkley is, was a team like the Eagles saying, we could add a blue chipper. And they mm-hmm. added an absolute stud at a position that you don't always need one.
True.
But he definitely makes them better. He took them to another level.
Yep.
The ecosystem that Barkley jumped into was among the best in the NFL, and then he took them to another level. And that is, I think, at the root of the conversation, Nate, that we'll continue to have this morning and start off. That's at the root of the Myles Garrett idea, or that's at the root of the pick the receiver you want them to trade for that's a big name. The Eagles were close, knocking on the door,
yep.
And then they added one of the best at a position, and it's taken them to another level.
I also think there's something to be said about, like, because running back contracts had been so, like,
depressed,
yeah. That his contract, which he signed for less than Gabriel Davis signed, turns to be, and I think I saw, I don't know who wrote this article, I'm not going to claim it's my thought, but the idea that running back contracts might start becoming a thing again because of how high the wide receiver contracts are, and being able to find great value at the highest paid running back level compared to the highest paid wide receiver level.
Yeah.
Something definitely to consider as the league starts to pay these receivers more and more. Jamar Chase is going to be next.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, Gabriel Davis, who's the third wide receiver in Jacksonville this year,
that's a tough one.
Is going to end up making like $8 million more than Saquon Barkley.
Myles Garrett, I think, has four elite years ahead of him and is a complete difference maker. If I could get that done with this year's one and next year's one and then a player, I would do that tomorrow.
Daniel Jeremiah? I don't know. I was too excited about what you just said before we turned the mic.
I know. Sorry. I wanted to tell you that earlier.
It's okay.
We started Severance.
Oh.
I'd have to watch it again.
It's
one of those.
It's a bit of a worm. Like it takes a little bit to get you. But then when it gets you, man, it's just, whoa.
It looks great.
It really is. It's one of my favorite TV shows I've ever watched. And I have not even started season two yet because I'm waiting for more episodes to show up before I start. I'm rewatching season one because it took 3 years. I thought, this is a show I think I want to. I read a recap. I got time. I'm gonna watch it all again.
It took you 3 years to finish?
No. No, it took them 3 years to make it? Season two. Season one ended in 22, and it took them until now to get around to season two coming out.
And it's not all the way out, though.
Right. It's all made, but they're releasing one episode every Friday. So there's maybe four or five of them out now. And I don't know how far they'll go, how many. I think season one only had nine. So I don't know how long season two will go, but I'm waiting for them all to be there.
It's not going to take me that long to catch up.
No.
If there's only nine.
Right. I think that's right. I think there's nine.
If I may, Andrew Filippone earlier tweeted his top five Steelers Super Bowl moments.
Mm-hmm.
What are the top five Bills Super Bowl moments? Are there five that we like?
I think we could certainly get to five, even though the games all went, you know, to varying degrees, not the way you wanted. I'm really not trying to be funny. For me, you know what honestly popped into my head? Because I saw the tweet from Andrew, and I had a feeling this was what you were going to mention. So you didn't exactly get to spring it on me. But in Super Bowl 25, Matt Kavanaugh warming up is one of my favorite moments.
So that's pretty early, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's Leon Seals lands on Hostetler. There's a famous photo of Hostetler just absolutely getting, like, Seals leaves his feet and just engulfs Hostetler. And, you know, this is most of the rules about roughing the quarterback. Full weight of the body,
definitely.
Just like body slammed. I mean, Andre the Giant style. Just clobbers Hostetler. And
after he'd thrown the ball.
Right. And it looks bad for Hostetler. And I remember seeing Kavanaugh warming up on the side. I'm like, oh my God, we got it. And then that stupid Cheektowaga Jeff with his stupid pizzeria manager mustache came back out there. And that was that.
So that's the first one. First time I've heard that.
That's what we used to call him. Back at, you know, we were working in a pizza place that bordered on Cheektowaga, so like we had squatters' rights on that kind of phrasing. That was a moment. I swear, like, it literally was the first thing that came to mind. You know, Thurman's run was obviously great. You know, the drive to get in position, even the field goal that ended up being no good. There were some really great moments.
What's this now?
But I for me, top five, Kavanaugh warming up would be on the list.
Kavanaugh. I never knew that one.
I also...
Well, I mean, I did, but I haven't thought about it.
I'm pretty sure number 12.
Single digits.
Yeah.
I want to say.
All right.
Not sure.
I don't know if YouTube's going to have footage of Matt Kavanaugh warming up on the sidelines. I doubt that's out
there. I want to say nine.
I don't think I can Google that and call it up.
You know the Bills punted on fourth and two or less three times?
Sure they did. It was 1990.
It was.
Or 91, technically.
First possession.
Not even technically.
How egregious would this be now? First possession, fourth and one at their 43 punt. A minute into the game. Oh. They had a fourth and one at the 50, leading 10-3 in the second quarter. This might be your Kavanaugh moment. Don Smith touchdown, Giants three and out, Thurman for 14, then for four,
Giants go offside to make it 3rd and 1 at the 50. Kelly DeReed incomplete punt. Punt to the 7. That's when the safety happens off of that.
Right. That's also...
So at least you had the safety.
I think the moment... Well, you didn't know it at the time. Like, you see the play. You're hoping Hostetler's going to drop the ball in the end zone and you're going to get a touchdown instead of a safety. I don't think we... You know, so that moment the play happens, you don't know how close that actually came to be. It's replay after. You see Bruce's hand on Hostetler's wrist. The ball... The hand he's got the ball in... Bruce puts the meat hook right on that wrist and, like, is just holding it, and Hostetler somehow manages to hold on to that football. That was a moment.
Safety. A moment. Bills 3 and out after the safety. No yards gained. 3 incomplete passes. All right. Giants 3 and out.
Should have fed Thurman.
Well, yeah. Giants 3 and out again. And the Bills drive to the 44 of the Giants, leading 12-3. With 4 minutes to go in the half, and had 4th and 2 at the Giants 44 and punted. Now that's like a field goal.
Right.
Man, first half, they punted on 4th and 1 or 2 three times, all from like the middle of the field.
Yeah, 43 midfield and their 40-something. Right, yeah, all right. Yeah.
Oh, that is egregious.
That is tough.
Giants touchdown, Bills take a knee halftime. Giants touchdown. I mean, it's not the double up or the double dip everybody's obsessed with, but it is. I'm sure that's out there. Like, and, in real time,
yeah.
How long it was between like more than the one Kelly Neal done.
Well, that Giant drive to open the second half is like nine minutes?
Almost. Or yeah. About 9 minutes.
Now, the one at the end of the first half couldn't have been as long because you said the Bills punted with less than 5 minutes ago. So
right, but it's 10 plays.
Yeah.
And that's a Baker touchdown.
Right, Stephen Baker, the touchdown.
That's
Baker.
Tally, or is that
that plays in the second half? I'm pretty sure. Maybe it's on the drive that led to that play in my head is in the second half.
Okay, that's right. It's on the other touchdown drive. It's Ingram.
Yeah,
3rd and 13. Oh, it's not a touchdown. I haven't thought about this game in a long time. Ingram for 14. We broke all the tackles.
Yeah, do you remember talking to Daryl Tally one time? Said like. Yeah, we one of us, I might have been me, I don't remember, brought up that play.
It wouldn't have been me.
Something about it. And he was just like, do I think about it? Like, I had him 3 times. Like, I had 3 shots at him, short of the first down, and they couldn't get him. You know, do I think about it? Something to that effect is what he said. Like, yeah, I thought about it. Thanks for asking, Bulldog. Yeah, man.
The Bills stopped Anderson on a 4th and 2 at their own 30, at the Bills 35, just outside of field goal range.
Look at that edging Parcells.
Yeah, he knew what to do, and he didn't get it. So had they lost, I'm sure that would have been talked about. Yep. But who even remembers this?
Why didn't you take the points?
The Thurman touchdown to start the fourth quarter would be my number one Bills Super Bowl moment ever. What else would top it? Like,
Tasker blocking the punt in Los Angeles.
I like it, but 7-0.
Yeah.
Like, you can taste it right here.
Yeah.
This has been a great game. The Giants are good enough to beat you, but Thurman busts that run, and so on.
Yeah.
Then you get another 7-minute Giant drive, a Bills punt, a Giants punt, and then Norwood. Each half ended on a kneel down. I wonder if you could bet that.
You should be able to. I want
to bet it for this game now.
Oh,
Can I go bet that somewhere?
I don't think it works that way.
How many halves? What percentage of halves end with a kneel down? 20? More? Higher?
I think higher.
Closer to half? Half the halves?
Yes. Closer to 40%, I'm going to say.
I'm going to look that up. I'm going to look up this Bill season. How many of the 34 halves? What playoffs will make it 40? Nice even number. How many halves ended on a kneel down?
Mm.
obviously, we got a really young group of receivers. All can be really, really, really special. But I think personally, we need a guy that's proven to be a number one already.
That's Josh Jacobs, Packers running back.
Well, I thought they were the blueprint, though.
Listen,
all last year, like, oh, this is how you should do it.
This
Green
is
Bay.
Right. RIP the Packers model, 2023 to 2023. Listen, their receivers are still really good. They've got a bunch of good receivers, but that is maybe less than ideal to have your starting running back be like, yeah, these guys are good, but we need somebody better.
Yeah, right.
I feel like Christian Watson's inability to stay on the field for them is a big factor, but, you know, Romeo Doubs is great, and Jaden Reed's awesome, and Dontavian Wicks is good, but
Romeo Doubs, contract year.
Yeah. There's Josh Jacobs. He is on the Packers wide receiver train. Good morning. It's Jeremy and Joe. It is very icy out there. I saw Pat Hammer with an update. The temperatures are expected to rise in a couple hours, so the glaze that's out there will melt, but there's definitely a glaze of ice on just about everything. So be careful. Take time. You might not think it's icy when you're driving, but it's you got ice-covered roads and sidewalks and stairs and everything. So be careful. 803-0550, your number. One quick follow-up on Myles Garrett. Denzel Ward of the Browns just saw an article moments ago that if they trade Garrett, he might want out too. Basically, the direction of the franchise, what are we going to do here? Listen, if they trade Garrett and they trade Ward, they could have Joe, this is how you rebuild. You're going to be bad. This is how you do it. Denzel Ward's good.
Yeah. All right.
So,
three firsts, Greg Rousseau, and what to get both of them?
You want both of them?
I want both of them. Yes, I want both of them.
No.
Dalton Kincaid. Do they want him?
They have David Njoku.
Okay, they don't want him. Do they want... They definitely don't want Kyrie Elam. Right,
everybody throwing Kyer Elam.
He is the throw-in to a trade for like the last 2 years.
Yeah,
they want. What do the Browns want? Is Rousseau the only player that makes any sense for them? Like, is the only player that we've really mentioned?
Yeah,
a throw-in to a trade.
I feel like Epinesa is maybe not make more sense, but there's a guy that plays. Rousseau has to sign. And if you're signing on for a rebuild, whatever. If you're going to give me $100 million, maybe I'll sign on to a rebuild. But
Christian Benford's too good for this.
I don't know.
You're not putting him in a trade.
Pressure's on, Brandon Bean. The world's watching. I saw Pete Prisco say the Bills have to go all in. Yeah. So anyway, Joe, someone wrote to me on Twitter. Charlie wrote this and asked this question about Garrett. And we got to get the MVP conversation as well because that's tonight. Where do the Bills need the help? A better secondary would help. A dominant defensive end and a difference maker defensive tackle are all possibilities. What's the best answer? And he suggests that Myles Garrett is the sexy answer. Why? Garrett's the sexy answer. What's the best answer? It's really tough to try and come up with any answer that's better than the best defensive player in football. Right? I mean, you could say it's sexy. You could say a lot of different things. He's the best defensive player in football.
Yeah,
outside of maybe this year, it's going to be Patrick Surtain that wins that award. So, sometimes people say like, "Oh, this is the sexy move," and mean it as a slight to the idea. It's
almost like
just
he's a big name, like when Beckham was an idea.
Yeah,
for us here.
Yeah, when Beckham was an idea, as like, okay, he's shown he's still valuable. Maybe he can still play. Maybe he can get back to where he was. You need somebody at this position, and there's nobody else out there. This is just if everybody in the entire league were out there, this is who you would probably take. This is who you'd want.
Yeah, who would anybody want more? I'd rather have Surtain, right? Would I rather have TJ Watt? No. Right,
no,
isn't he 2 years older?
Definitely no.
Would I rather Max Crosby was a name like actually we had maybe callers like a week or two ago that said, yeah, I think I might rather have Crosby. We had somebody that called in and said that they thought, Myles Garrett was too nice compared to Max Crosby.
Well, Crosby is a specific, he gets after Mahomes and talks trash to him all day, and it'd be fun to have that guy on their team.
Yeah, he's always in his face.
Yes, because he kind of hates Mahomes.
That's right. That's fine, though. But, if you sack him and then you don't say anything to him after, I'm fine with that, too, I guess. Yeah. But Crosby's not as good. I don't think. Again, we're almost nitpicking at this point because these are some of the best players in the league. But I think Garrett's probably better than Crosby is. Who else is there a safety you would put? Who's the best safety in football right now?
The best safety in football, is it Kyle Hamilton? I don't know.
Okay. Who's the best linebacker in football? Like, yeah, sure, like Kyle Hamilton. Like,
it's probably not Kyle Hamilton. He's just got the name that popped in my head.
Right. Like, even for the Bills' sake, though, any of these guys, maybe Sertan would be a little different because, you know, he's, like, insane. But what's the thing they've been chasing that they haven't had? They've had an elite corner, you know? Like, they have had elite linebackers. They've had elite safeties. They have never had, except for, like, a seven-game stretch in 21 or 22, they've never had an elite pass rusher.
With McDermott.
We know what a McDermott defense looks like with an elite corner. We know what it looks like with an elite safety. We know what it looks like with an elite linebacker. Do we know what it looks like with a Myles Garrett?
No, and if he wants to rush with four, no single player will give you more ability to rush with four than him.
Right. He also, by the way, 50. Does not come off the field. If you look at the snap counts that he's played in his 5 years, like, never comes off the field, which is very different from the way the Bills do things.
Yeah.
But we did just see a little bit of a view into this last year, how much more Rousseau played than others. Like, maybe when there is really a big gap between who your number one is and then who your number three or number four is, then they would be willing to play the guy a lot more. Because I can't believe if they traded for Myles Garrett that he's going to be like a 50% snap guy like some of their other ends are.
803-0550, our number, to the MVP conversation in a moment. Sal just texting us a picture. He's got a brand new 60-inch television, and he has us on it because we're on the YouTube stream. So
wow.
Yeah, I mean, my face is not supposed to be on a television that big at any point ever, so apologies to anybody that's doing that.
We don't have the lighting in this room yet for me to be on a 60-inch TV.
Also, Thursday is, you know, I broadcast from home on Thursdays, but due to, like, family and kid stuff, so you're getting a good 60-inch look at my Carrier Dome parking sign.
Yeah, I know. That's the one.
The one thing I have
the only thing
in this
on
home
the
office
back there
is the Carrier Dome parking sign.
What does that say, where champions play in the back?
Yes, it does say where champions play. Joe, it says that. Yeah. You know, right? We've got a lacrosse team that's won an awful lot. What do you want from me? And, you know, the
women's hockey team won a championship.
Men's soccer won a national championship.
That was recent, wasn't it?
Yeah, and they don't play in the dome. They play outside. Yeah.